Harih Om Sahana Vavatu Sahana Bhunaktu Saha Viryam Karavavahai Tejasvi Navadhitamastama Vidyavishavahai Om Shanti 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 Om Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shiva Sadi Gaura Bhakta Brinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare
Page 5 Adikarnas 12-17 Sutras 31-37 The Supreme Lord possesses seemingly paradoxical qualities.
With the students like Mataji and Prabhu who are writing essay questions, there's a point to note that Adikaranas 12 and 13 fall under a common theme. So Brahman the Creator we have already done. So 12 and 13 are in this, as well as the next theme that we're doing right now. So it's not just to tell them that this is what it is.
You're just saying that there's an overlap of Adikaranas.
Yeah. Adikaranas 12 and 13 are in two themes.
To the Vedantist viewpoint on Brahman as the creator, the opposition comes up with their standpoint on why Brahman can't be the creator. They object and rationalize by bringing up the contrast qualities in the Supreme Lord, but are utterly misled by these qualities, since they miss the essential factor of devotion to the Lord, bhakti. The Sutrakar refutes the opponents by interpreting the contrasting qualities in the Supreme Lord as follows. The Lord doesn't have material senses, but alternatively possesses transcendental senses. Adikarna 12. The Lord's blissful nature induces him to perform the action of creating the world, lacking any personal motivation, ambition, or need. Adikarna 13. The Lord is impartial since the jivas receive happiness, miseries, and different bodies based on their karmas. Adikarna 14. The karmas of the jiva are beginningless because the jiva himself is beginningless. Though the Supreme Lord can nullify the jiva's karmas, he doesn't do so since he respects the free will of the jivas. Adikarna 15. Right, so they're beginningless, the karma's beginningless, but it's not because the karma came with the living entity when they, you know, that it's always been there. It's because the karma starts before they come into the material world. Right? That's the actual point. Because being situated in the spiritual platform, within the spiritual context, because that's the natural position. See, jiva means tatasta. Tatasta means spiritual. Right? Then you have transcendental, then you have material. Does that make sense? In other words, there's devotion to the Lord, and you have the material consciousness. In between is spiritual, or just existence. Right? So, they're existing. That's their position. So that's on the spiritual platform. Now, when they divide the activities that are being performed in bhakti from the bhakti itself, and the activities themselves, they see, I can gain sense gratification from this. That's material consciousness. So that begins before, when they're still on the spiritual platform. So in other words, they haven't developed any attraction to the Lord, but they don't have attraction to the material as such. But when you deal with the secondary without the Lord, that is material. So they're not dealing with material energy, but they have material consciousness. So then they're transferred from the spiritual platform into the material. Because then the material, if you separate it, it actually doesn't care. Right? The material energy, the earth, water, fire, air, ether, the 24 elements, don't care if you deal with them in connection to Krishna or not. Maya, who's in control of it, does, but the elements themselves don't because they're unconscious. But in the spiritual world, everything is conscious, so they don't want to be used not connected to Krishna. That's not, they're not interested in that. Right? So that makes sense. That's why then we work with the modes of nature. Well, in the spiritual world, the Sandini, Sambit, Ladini, they don't want to be engaged, not connected to Krishna, because they're eternally connected. Does that make sense? So, therefore, that's why then the jiva's karma is called anadi. There is no beginning, because there's no material beginning. It didn't start in the material platform. It started on the spiritual platform.
On this particular point about the jiva being tatastha, the devotees, you know, they said that because the jiva is tatastha and that he falls down for the first time, that implies that his position is not in the spiritual world, but he belongs to a different place as such.
A different place, yeah, yeah. So then, where's the different place?
That's what, you know.
Where's the different place? The thing is because they're using material intelligence, this is the whole point, is people have to get over that their material intelligence, which everybody in the world glorifies them for, is actually totally useless when it comes to spiritual life. Kapila Muni makes that point very clearly.
They
can argue all they want, but the point is what's the premise? The premise is because they are intelligent materially, therefore if they can't figure it out with their material intelligence, it's not figureoutable. That's their position. That's the underlying position. It's because if it doesn't make sense to them, it doesn't make sense. Because they're smart. Because in the material world, you're a doctor, a lawyer, a businessman, everybody reveres you. But on the spiritual platform, it's like, you know, nobody cares. So that's the basic weakness of the whole thing. Because otherwise, you can go on arguing and arguing all day about different points. But this is the actual essential point. You can't know Krishna unless he reveals himself. Because they'll always come up with these things. It doesn't make sense. Dvidvita Gorilla is there making all kinds of faces and doing stupid stuff in Vrindavan, you know, with Balaram and his gopis. Now is that another place? And then how do they see him if he's in another place? And then you just have to start getting into sci-fi stuff. Right? Shankachuda's walking off with Balaram's gopis. So, you know, Arishtasura is there. People aren't thinking at all. No brain here. I'm meaning it. They're not using their, but they're just so proud that whatever pops into their head, then that's the reality. Because in the material world, they're respected as being smart. Right? You don't get into professional occupations unless you have a very good, you know, academic position. But that has nothing to do with spiritual. So just because their, you know, brain can't figure it out doesn't mean that it's correct. Because they have to remember, is they're smart. But these guys are way smarter. You know, these Mayavadis, these, you know, following Shankya, these guys, they can argue down to the finest point. That's why Vyasadeva is arguing on such a fine point. We'd take all this together as one thing. But with these guys, they're so smart, you have to break it down into all these parts, right? Into six parts. Because they are materially way smarter than anybody today. You know? That's the whole thing. Because they have the austerities. These people just have the austerity it took to get through school and get good grades. They don't have the austerity of the lifestyle. Does that make sense? You have to remember that if you're from that particular part of the country and they're professionals, and even though they're from very high-grade aristocratic families, they were not getting up Brahma Muhurta, chanting japa, doing all the different things like that. They only started that after becoming a devotee. Yes, maybe their parents did a little bit, their grandparents maybe solidly, but they don't have any credit there, so they shouldn't be so proud. Right? And the same thing applies to someone who's from an academic background or from, you know, Indian scholarly background. They know Sanskrit, they know this, that, they're astronomers, they're Ayurvedic doctors, or, you know, like that. They come from families that know all this. It's the same thing. They may be more pious, But it's still not pious enough, because the only piety that you can understand this is bhakti. So since they've taken up bhakti, the acharyas have said this. Prabhupada says they fall from the spiritual world. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur says that. Bhaktivinoda Thakur says that. Who are they to go against this? That's why Prabhupada said it's not a point of discussion. It's just, this is the fact. That's what's mentioned by them. Is one's there, one can see all these things. One separates what you see from Krishna and want to enjoy it directly. Then that starts the process, the cycle of karma. So that happened on the spiritual platform. That's why it's called anadi. Not that, oh, you were always here. But then if we're always here, we're already in the fallen condition. How are we tatasta? There is a tatasta shakti, but it's not another place. See, you have the jiva, which is spiritual, right? You have the material body, which is material. How are these two in the same place at the same time? That's tatashta shakti. We're here in the dham, which is spiritual, and we're walking around worrying about, you know, what's happening for lunch. How is that happening? Tatashta shakti. So it's not a place. It's where these two meet, because you have the spiritual and material, what's in between. It's just like saying, okay, well, we have the day and we have the night, and then there's the twilight, and that must be a whole different place other than... That's the kind of intelligence we're working with here. But because they all, someone says it, yeah, yeah, and the other one, yeah, yeah, then they all think that they're so smart. You know? Like that. So we have to be able to get beyond this point, because we've come up to this point so many times that if the Lord doesn't reveal, you don't know. How many times in this year have we come up with the topic, you can't know the Lord unless He reveals Himself?
Multiple.
Yeah, this year and last year especially. Before that, it's occasional. But these last 2 years, is because bhakti is bhakti, and that's it. It's not dependent upon anything else. It's not dependent on the senses, the intelligence, morality, anything. It's based simply on having that attraction to the Lord. Right? And so it becomes confusing because, let's give an example. Let's say there's a person who knows multiple languages. Okay? Very good at all languages. And he's, you know, in a kind of a situation where you may have people from all kinds of different places. So let's say somebody talks to him in one language. What language does he speak back in?
Same.
The same language, right? Unless, of course, we're in France, right? Then you don't speak back in, like... You understand?
But so, I speak English now.
Huh?
I speak English.
Yes, yes. That's because we're here. But if we were in France, why don't you know? It's like this. This is the fun part, right? If you're in America and someone from somewhere else comes to America, why are you not speaking English? You're in America. But if Americans go to any place else in the world, why aren't they speaking English? I'm speaking English. Why aren't you responding? No, because you're now in France. You speak French. You know, like this. That's a funny thing. Like that. So, how you say? French are just pulling the Americans up on their own philosophy. Right? They all know English perfectly, but they won't speak to you in it because of your, you know, because you think, yeah, yeah, like that, yeah.
Everybody has a pride of their own language.
But it's because of the pride of the person speaking the English. That's why they have a problem. If the guy was nice and good, then he would speak English. It's all attitude. So, that's a separate thing. So, now, you speak back in the same language. So now, is it the language that's important, or what's being discussed, or what's being, what is the point of the language? Which is the important thing?
The message.
The message is important, right? So that's the whole point. In the five rasas, then they're using a medium or a language of interaction, of relationship. Right? And so Krishna then therefore reciprocates by speaking in that language. But it's not about the language, it's about the bhakti. That's why then it doesn't bring it up so much in the other rasas, but in the conjugal rasa, that's where the points make, because if it applies in the conjugal, it applies in all of them. So it's not about the kama rupa, it's about the prema rupa. So in other words, the expression through desire is not the point that attracts Krishna. It's the message that's being given, or that of bhakti, the prema that's there, that is what appreciated. But because it's being spoken in Kama Rupa, it's reciprocated in Kama Rupa. Just like Mother Jashoda, she expresses her prema through parental ras. He reciprocates through that parental ras. The friends through friendship, he reciprocates in that. Servitorship, he reciprocates in that. But it's about the prema, the message. Right? So, in other words, it's not the medium is the message. That's the whole problem. The people who say the medium is the message, they're the ones who are saying are not intelligent. Right? The message is the message, and the medium happens to be what you use. Right? So that's the whole point, is that it's just a medium to use. And so, therefore, when it's not about prema, you're using the medium for yourself, it's material. Even you're situated on the spiritual platform, working with spiritual ingredients, it's material. And if they can't understand this, then, you know, I'm sorry. Stick to chanting Hare Krishna. You know, like that. Yes?
Maharaj, we also discussed during the Bhagavatam class is that there are two separate things. You know, the Prema Rupa and the Kama Rupa. And then this Rukmini, Krishna was attracted by her Prema Rupa, not necessarily by Kama Rupa.
Mm-hmm.
However, it seems to be that those two are inseparable, because when you get into that mood, you can't really separate yourself from, because it's conjugal or vatsalya or friendship, whatever it is. It's in one identity. We can't really separate them.
Yes, because the point is you have the primary and the secondary. So the prema rupa is the primary, the kama rupa is the secondary.
Right.
Just like with Mother Jashoda, prema rupa will be the primary, the vatsalya rupa will be the secondary.
Yeah.
Right? And then with the coward boys, prema rupa is the primary, and the shakya rupa is the secondary. So the secondary is the forms and activities that are used to express the prema. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So you can't separate them. That's the discussion between the, let's say, the, what were we taking there? Childhood and childness. You can't separate them.
Yeah.
But the childness is actually the main point. How you appreciate childness is through childhood. But the point is, childhood is subservient to childness. Because childhood means it's manifest, but still childness means the principle is there eternally. Whether there's a manifestation of a child or not, still childness exists. You know? It's like cooking. Cooking exists, whether I'm cooking or not. But when I cook, that's the form of it, and then it manifests. So, in other words, we can't appreciate the childness unless there's the manifestation of childhood.
Right.
But childhood has no meaning unless there's childness. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So the primary is the main. It's independent. Whether you can appreciate it's being manifest or not, it exists. But the secondary, unless it's being manifest by the primary, unless it's dependent on the primary, it doesn't exist. Its existence is not there. It may eternally exist as a Shakti, but the point is its manifestation is not there. It can't function. So that's the point, is Krishna is independent, his energies are not. So it's the same principle, this masculine, feminine, creator, the created, Shakti, Shaktiman. It's the same thing, primary, secondary, you know, principle, detail. But they're all just synonyms or different aspects of the same thing. So that's then what's being established, is that the secondary form is important only because of the primary. So when it's connected to Krishna, you don't need to separate them, because then that way they're non-different. That's meaning Krishna's energies are non-different, but at the same time they're different. Otherwise, how do you have rasa? Right? But you can't have rasa unless they're the same, because otherwise how do you, you know, how you say? You know, a frying pan and a tire off of a Formula One car. What's, you know, how do they do anything together? Right? There's no relationship. So it has to be something similar. So that's why the oneness has to be there for a relationship to be there. But to express the relationship, there must be difference. So,
yeah.
So, therefore, on the spiritual platform, we don't have to make the distinction. We only make the distinction and study it because we make the material the same. Because we'll make the mistake, I'm a devotee, I do devotional service, everything I do is devotional. Because we're looking at the secondary and taking the secondary as the devotional service, when actually, no, it's the primary is the devotional service. Why you're doing it, that's the devotional service. So that way then, everything secondary can be engaged in Krishna's service, as long as you see it that way. So we say yukta vairagya, I mean I can use everything in Krishna's service, then yes, as long as it is Krishna's service. But if it's matter, whatever I do is devotional service, then there's a good chance what you're doing is not devotional service. Maybe ultimately you give it to Krishna, so through renunciation it goes to Krishna. But during the Sambandha and Abhideya parts, it's not devotional service. Because the focus is simply on the secondary. And its connection to us and how we're operating it. And I'm the controller, I'm the enjoyer, it's mine. But then, because I want to surrender to Krishna, when I get the result, and then I give it to Krishna. Well, sannyas means, I'm Krishna's, whatever I'm doing, Krishna, all the work is Krishna, the results that naturally come from the Krishna, they're given by Krishna, and they're for Krishna. So that's the subtle difference we're trying to catch, because externally it's exactly the same. Right? It means if it's in its natural pious state, as you come down in the consciousness, it starts to get more distorted. So then it may be different from, you know what I'm saying? Just like, let's say, the person on the platform of Anamoy. So it's immoral atheism. So they just do things for their senses. So the form that they'll use may not be very refined. Or even if it's refined, it's not in its natural state. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
You know, yes.
And for us, we practice, you know, Navavida Bhakti, which is direct.
Yes.
It's primary.
Right.
However, we can... Even that we can do as a secondary activity, as an external activity.
Yes, yes.
So that the question is, how can we practice, you know, the main, like, where it's coming from? Because we don't know who does what. It all looks the same.
Yeah, but that's why we study. That's why we analyze to this point. Because the question comes up, why analyze this stuff to this point? You know, isn't this just yawn? Isn't that this? It's because then we can tell the difference. But it's not because of intelligence that we're telling the difference. It's because we're using our intelligence in the field of intellectual study or analytical study. And so then Krishna being pleased that we're doing that to please him, then he reciprocates by revealing himself through that medium. Right? Just like Mother Jashoda expresses her bhakti through the parental rasa, he reciprocates through parental rasa. He reveals himself in that form. So we do the study of Krishna, but it's not the study itself that gets Krishna, that we're doing it to please him. Right? We're studying this because Prabhupada said to study this. Right? So we're using the books and trying to connect them together by, you know, what Prabhupada is mentioning. Right? So Prabhupada mentions that we're putting together two things. We're taking that. You have second six cantos of Bhagavatam, right? And so then, if we're looking at the courses, how Prabhupada gave them, Bhakti Shastri, Bhakti Vaibhava, Bhakti Vedanta. So Prabhupada wanted those who were gurus to be Bhakti Vedanta, right? He had mentioned that, you know, second initiates should be, Bhakti Shastri. Then, you know, sannyasis and other leaves should be Bhakti Vaibhava, and then those who are gurus should be Bhakti Vedanta. And then another quote, he says, to sit on the Vyasasan, you should know the six schools of philosophy. Right? So now, what discusses the six schools? Vedanta Sutra. So therefore, Vedanta Sutra and the, Bhakti Vedanta level go together. You understand? So that's then how things are put together for the course. It's just based on what Prabhupada said. We're studying this because Prabhupada said. Otherwise, you know, what do we have to do with Vedanta Sutra? You know what I'm saying? Like that. We're still trying to figure out, you know, which end of the keys to, you know, start the car with, you know, stuff like that, you know. You know, Yachman spoon. Which side do you hold? You know, it's like that kind of stuff, you know. Does that make sense? Yeah. So, therefore, because probably that's why we're doing it. So it's not that we're studying this because we're scholars and academics and that's why we're doing it. We're doing it because this is what Prabhupada wanted. So that's why we're doing it. So we're not trying to become scholars. That's why you see is that those who are generally identify as scholars, you do not see them in these classes. They may hear about it, they may come, they may sit down, and then they'll go away. Because we don't sit there and analyze in Sanskrit and break apart the words and get into the grammar and all that kind of stuff. And so for them there's no taste. It's about Siddhanta. It's like, what academic or what scholar is into Siddhanta? It's like, forget it. Yeah. So that's why you don't see them in these classes. Mm-hmm. You know? You just won't. They'll go other places. They'll stay away. They may have some respect for it. But they have no taste for it. Because the methods we use are trying to identify how bhakti works and all that. The focus is not on the secondary. Well, the secondary has to be used to express the primary, but it's about the primary and then how the secondary connects to the primary and how to practically do that. Right? Because if it's just a matter of knowledge, we should be going through X amount of pages per day. Right? But it's about how we're going to apply it, right? So then we're making the point here, and then we're discussing, you know, these different points. And some of these points we've been discussing for the last, you know, 10 years. But because there's still an obstacle in individuals' understanding or practice, that's why it's still being discussed, with the idea that they'll catch it and be able to apply it. Because if we were just working on the academic level, then I would say probably at least 2/3, 3/4 of the questions that are asked in this class would not be entertained. That's if you're talking about someone who likes dealing with questions. Like that. Otherwise, most of them, unless they're very exactly on what the person wants to discuss at the time, they would not be addressed. So it's the idea is that it's about trying to get people to be able to understand it, to apply it. But the point is we have to be able to catch the subtleties that are there. Because unless you can tell the difference between the primary and secondary, how can you identify pure bhakti? But at the same time, unless you can see the non-difference, how do you apply it? So that's the difficulty of this course, is that we have to be able to actually practically use Achinta Veda Veda Tattva. Because it's not about memorizing things. It's not about knowing facts and all that. We have that. We have a list there of stuff. Now let's say you have the review questions. Okay? Now if we were having a standard test of standard academic, you know, environments, when those questions are being asked, would you be able to have the book in front of you?
No,
not at all, because it's all about that. They don't have the essay question. For us, it's open book. Because we just want you to know those things. These are the elements that we just use to discuss as far as examples and how we do and facts that need to be known. And so that's why it's all open book. What we're trying to get to is, do you actually understand what it's for? So the review is to just make sure that you went through, read it, and you're aware of the points, so that when we move on, it becomes a basis for the next group of facts. In other words, the secondary you should know, but only because of its connection to the primary. That's the essay question. Does that make sense? So that's the difference. As far as we go, it's traditional. Because you see in the Vedic test, let's say someone studied the whole Rig Veda. Right? And so now it's time for their final test. They have a pot. And in the pot will be a bunch of papers, and on the papers will be written one shloka. And then they reach a hand in the pot, and it could be a shloka from anywhere in the whole Rig Veda, all 10,000 verses. They pull out a paper, or a palm leaf, or whatever it is going on at the time, and whatever number it says, it doesn't even give you the say, it just says the number. You say the thing perfectly, prophet, you know, words, intonation, everything, and you can say that, you've passed. Well, the modern, if you were 10,000, how many questions there be on this?
10,000.
Yeah, they'd like that, yeah. So that's the difference, because the Vedic is not about the secondary, it's about the primary. Scholars make it about the secondary. That's why they're so annoying in the stories. You know, it's like, what was that? Was it Astavakra or something? Then you had Vandi. You know? No? Vandi? Can't remember, it was Astavakra. It says, Astavakra's father, I think it was. It means this. No. Yeah, I think it's Astavakra. His father went to, the king was having this big debate thing. He was inviting all these big scholars, so his father was invited. And then they argue with this scholar called Vandi. And he was the court, you know, the court logician and all that. And so if they're defeated, then they get drowned in the ocean. So then he was drowned in the ocean. And so then Astavakra, when he got older and figured out what happened, and he was 8, you know, then he went to go argue with this guy. And so then he came there, and after things, basically, he defeated Vandi, and so he said, now, you know, so what do you want? He says, I want him to be drowned, you know, like everybody else. And so then they went down to the ocean, and then it was revealed that Vandi is a minister for Varuna, and Varuna was having a big yajna, and he wanted all these super qualified Brahmas to come down and take part in his yajna. So his father was down there doing things, chanting mantras for Varuna's yajna. So then they brought him back and everything like that. Right? But the whole point is you always get these scholars, you know, that they're just, all they do is argue over points. You know, there's a famous one in the Tamil literature. There's one, the one's famous thing, I don't know the thing, where there's this young man, and I think he has affection for the princess or something, and then the minister, you know, then he says no, he has to be able to, you know, to qualify or something, say 100 verses like that, you know, in glorification of something like that, and if he can do that, then he can marry the girl, and if not, he'll die. Right? You know, so then he takes it up, he gives 100 verses like that, and then everybody's happy and all this, and the king's happy, the girl's happy, everyone's happy. And then after everything dies down, the scholar said no, because the first one is always the invocation. So there has to be 101. He only said 100, so he dies. Right? And because it's Tamil literature, they did kill him. Like that. So you always get these kind of people. And the thing is, they think they are so smart, when they're just an annoyance to everybody. Nobody likes these guys. Literally, nobody likes them. But they're so proud of what they know. So, therefore, then Vyasadeva is just giving the tools. Not that we like to argue with all this. It's just that they get in the way of devotional service. Like here, Prabhupada says, we fall from the spiritual world because of our envy of Krishna. What does that mean? He, as the primary, is being served by secondary. And being envious, we want the secondary for ourselves. Right? So that's what we open the class with. But they'll say, no, but you can't have these two in the same place. That's what Tathasta Shakti means. They'll say, it has to be another place. And what is this place? We'll give you a clue. It has to be nothingness. So is that our philosophy? No, that's what the Shakyas say. Or the Mayavadis, the Buddhists, because they're taking it from there. So in other words, in their intellectual thing, because it doesn't make sense to them, it hasn't been revealed, so then they will by default start preaching Buddhism. And because they're smarter than everybody, then they'll shut everybody else down because they're qualified. Well, I'm a professional, what do you know? It's kind of like we're talking devotional service. Isn't that, it means, can a doctor give advice on law? No. So in the professional world, you can't go between disciplines. You have to stick to. So therefore, if you're a doctor or a lawyer, what's your position to say anything on devotional service? Nothing. Zero. So it's only because being a devotee you can say. So therefore, don't bring up that you're a doctor or a lawyer. You can't do that. That's cheating. Is that something? So that's what we're talking about here. So that principle is understood, then so many of their questions get answered. But that's always avoided because it's Siddhanta, and so therefore then you lose the fun of arguing all these points. Because here it's about, no, it's the point that we're dealing with. No, we're talking about your consciousness that we're dealing with. Yes?
When we say, for example, this, as you said, you mentioned this lawyer, doctors.
Yes.
Usually it means they have a brain, they have ability to concentrate.
Yes.
So when they come to Krishna consciousness, those abilities are still here.
Yes, yes.
So from this point of view, we can say that they have a say if they practice Krishna consciousness, because their understanding might be deeper.
They might be, but the point is it's only by bhakti. It's not because the person's just joined. He's been in there 3 months. And, you know, the other guy was there. He was working in a cloth shop, you know, folding up cloth. The point is, as far as devotion goes, you can't say that one, because he's got more brain, is more advanced than the other one. Now, if with time he proves himself to be devotional and all that, and that's the main thing, then they won't say these things. Because the point is, Prabhupada said it like this, how can we argue? No. We can try to understand what Prabhupada said. Mm-hmm. But he said we fell from the spiritual world. So then they have to understand where is that, since they want a location. They can't identify. They say it has to be another place. So where is that other place? They absolutely, totally cannot say. But they won't accept what's been given by the acharyas. So therefore, what is the value of that intelligence? It's absolutely useless. That's why the Shastra calls that kind of mentality foolish. So you can have an IQ of 192 and still be a total fool. Right? Yeah. So that, since bhakti is about relationships, how well do these super intelligent people do in relationships? Nothing. They're absolutely useless. So then why should they think that now they're going to be the super brain in this? Now if they can use it for Krishna and see it and all that and follow the parampara, then it's a nice tool to have. It can be very advantageous. So they can help devotees understanding these things.
You can go to Sapaloka. They don't care about
Yeah, religion. But that's if they're austere. But are they austere? Right? In other words, the doctor that technically is a professional, but he just runs his little thing like this and that and takes care of the local neighborhood. He's technically, by definition, a professional, but you wouldn't call him a professional. The guy with the big thing and this and that and walking around and all that. So who's going to Tapaloka? Because the second one is the one who's going to speak like this. He's not going anywhere. Like that.
And another question about when we studied six schools, we didn't study it from Vedanta Sutra. Remember?
Yes, because that was part of technically Chaitanya Upanayana. So it's just giving that. But because it's just trying to get all these things done, you know, like that, we're doing this first. And when this is done, then the same technique will go back and then develop all the Chaitanya Upanayana things. Because you have to be able, just like this, you take the essence of what's here. You have to be able to take the essence, let's say, of Ayurveda and make it into a 2-week course. But not some superficial. It has to be what actually makes it work. You know what I'm saying? So that's the unique thing of this kind of this aspect of the Vedic approach, is that you know the essence, but you don't know the secondary. So you know the primary of the philosophy, and you know how that primary connects to Ayurveda. But you don't know the details of the secondary. So that's a kind of approach to knowledge that it's just, you don't have it. It's just about the primary, we know nothing about this. Like, we know, you know, about Krishna and this and that. We don't care about all these secondary things, because it's all Maya. Or we know all about this. But to know about, or it's that, yes, we know about this, we know a little bit of this and that, a little, you know, little review question level stuff. And that, and that, but this fourth option, where you know the essence and how it connects, that's the Bhagavatam. The Bhagavatam then touches on all the 14 books, but it only shows where it connects to Krishna. Detail, that's given in that scripture. So we're talking about what's the essence of it, how it applies. Does that make sense? Yeah. So that's it's actually very difficult to do. So many people come in and want to do this, but you know, we still wait. Right? Because so we figure when we finish this, then those who have worked on this, they may be able to work and do it. Does that make sense? So that's part of the beginning, so that we understand the culture and everything, and then so we have a background, so when the Bhagavatam and others refer to this, we know it. So it's the cultural side of it. So that's what we were doing there. But here, now, this is the essence of it we're going to get into next.
Can we say that karma is action performed in material consciousness, and bhakti is again the same thing, karma performed in Krishna consciousness?
No, it's action performed in Krishna consciousness and action performed not in Krishna consciousness. When it's action in Krishna consciousness, called bhakti. When it's action in not Krishna consciousness, called karma.
That is material consciousness.
Yes, but the point is, the word karma simply means action. Right? But by general usage, since most everybody is engaged in material karma, you know, therefore, we call, but just by saying the word karma, we mean material activities, right? But technically, karma is the action of Krishna consciousness, because karma means action. Just like, let's say, if we say the word tantra, what do we mean, right? General usage will mean, you know, worship of Shakti. But tantra simply means ritual. You have mantra and you have tantra. Mantra is the mantra itself. Tantra is the application of the ritual that you use the mantra in. That's the generic definition. But because by usage, then Shakti, the Devi tantras and that's what's mainly, because they use the term. So then others, it becomes known in that way. But that's not actually, tantra means that. So karma doesn't mean fruit of activities. Karma simply means action. Mm-hmm. Now, if you use it not for yourself, it's called fruitive. You use it for Krishna, it's called bhakti. That's why karma yoga and bhakti are the same. But at the same time, as if it's karma misra bhakti, then it's not considered the same. Because karma yoga, that is the same. That's pure devotional service. That's the actions of Krishna consciousness. That's why Prabhupada calls the fifth chapter action in Krishna consciousness. Because then you're using jnana and karma for Krishna. So that's the problem, is because we want the terms to be used in only one way. But the point is depending upon how you're using them, then that's what's there. You understand? So because we're attached to the secondary and not the primary, what's the meaning of it? That we're attached to the secondary, and then we give a meaning to it from the secondary, not from the primary. Because the primary is connected to all the secondary. But the secondary has a particular flavor. That's the thing. So we're attached to that. That's what makes the modes of nature. So someone who's attached to karma will use the words in one way, jnana will use it another way, and devotees will use it in a different way again. Because the devotees can accommodate the two. The others can't. You know, does that make sense? Yeah. Yes.
Dr. Kurti makes that point that karma is beginningless, as you explained previously.
Yes.
But then he says somehow we can put an end.
Yes.
Karma.
Yes.
Is that happens here, or we have to get out of the material?
It happens here. Means you can put it. It means by going there, you're completely out of it. But the point is you put an end to it, you know, here, by changing the consciousness. But if not, you remember Krishna, then remembering Krishna, that's not karma. You go there, then it's finished. But you have a fragrance left there. That's what Gokul is for, is dealing with the fragrance. You know. Is that
there are good associations there.
There's good associations.
You can take out the fragrance.
Yeah, yes. That's the whole point, is that it's the, how you say, it's the bhakti immersion course. You know. Yes.
Can we say that here in this body is not possible to attain prema physically? Some say.
But what does it matter? You know fragrance. What I'm saying? What does it matter?
Fragrance. When we say about fragrance.
Yeah, but the fragrance then, for when you get the fragrance, goes at. No, during bhava it's there. It goes at purva rag.
Which
is when you come to the point of samadhi in the smaranadasa.
So
you understand? So then apandasa, you're engaged in pastimes. You don't have any of the material left, but you haven't developed prema. And then when you develop prema, then you inherit the natural position. Right? Just inheritance comes, you know, because you're qualified, but it's natural that you'll get it. So in other words, the son's there, he behaves properly, he does his, you know, studies and practices, he'll naturally inherit, you know, from the father, right? But if he's behaving badly in this, then it'll wait. So that's the whole point. So sampadidasa means you'll inherit what's naturally what the soul should have, is that love for Krishna. So technically it can be done here, but it's very rare, so it's not discussed, because it's not something you can discuss, just like the taste of rasa can't be discussed, so it never is. Some will say, oh no, well, we're discussing it. No, you're not. You're discussing the sambandha aspects of it and the application of it, but you can't discuss the taste of it. You know? You know, the experience can't, you can give some indication of it. But you can't actually describe the experience. You can give words that others then, by their called impressions, can connect to different things and try to get an understanding. But it's only through experience. That's why rasa is tasted. It's not discussed. You know, we have rasa tattva, but that's not rasa tasted. Right? It's different.
Does a jiva necessarily go through the apanadasha stage?
Go through the
apanadasha stage.
Does he necessarily go through? Yes, you have to. Why you wouldn't?
Because
how would you not go through that? Because unless you take part in the pastimes with the eternal associates and see how they do it, how do you come to prema? See, by associating with them, then you see the idea of Krishna and that absorption in Krishna is there. So that brings you to samadhi. Then you can take part in the pastimes. The point is that somebody could technically get to prema while in this body.
Yeah.
But it's so rare, because Prabhupada mentions it, that someone could directly from here, leaving here, go to Goloka. But, you know, it's rare. So therefore, we talk about, you remember Krishna, you go to Gokul, from there then you come to the platform prema, then you go to Goloka. Like that. So therefore it's not for us. It's like, if you know, one in a billion chance, so should we be discussing that one in a billion? No, because the one in a billion, it just happens. It's not because he's got a technique. Does that make sense? So that's why we discuss sadhana bhakti. Because if we were on the platform, we would have already done it. Because it only takes a moment. So you know, if we say, but it's been 30 years, that means because we didn't do it in that moment. So therefore, we're on the second platform, right? You know, which is then engage in sadhana bhakti.
Waiting for the moment?
Yeah, waiting for the moment. Okay. Yes.
Where does Prabhupada say that we fell from the spiritual world?
That you have to just look in the books. I can't give you an exact reference.
Okay.
That's
what
the standard. Many books. Many books. See, these are the points. Is because of our material intelligence not being able to accept this.
Somebody asked me first. I brought this point up.
Yeah, but then just look it up in the folio. Why do we have to bring it up? You know, it's like, unless we prove it, it's wrong. It's kind of like, what do we care about? They want to know, look in the folio. Like that. Why do we have to prove it? Unless we prove it, then it's wrong. You know, if you want to just use mundane logic, it's a 50-50 chance. So therefore, you've read it, you don't know where it is, they want to know, they can look it up.
But did he say it in a way, like, really obvious way, like, we fell from
the spiritual world? What do you mean by obvious?
No, because sometimes it's a bit cryptic and people might not understand it.
Yeah, because it's called bhakti. Because it's being said very clearly and all that, but without devotion, it cannot be understood.
Yeah.
This whole idea is that, no, it has to be said so logically it makes sense. No, examples are only given to support and give an idea that due to from our samskaras, then we can do. But if you don't have pious samskaras, you cannot understand it. Pious meaning devotional.
Mm-hmm.
Intellectual samskaras aren't enough.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the whole point, is that this thing is that it can't be understood. That's why all the acharyas say, don't talk about it. Like, I was bringing it up simply as a passing point. So we can bring, because it mentions here, the jiva is beginningless. So I'm pointing out, he's beginningless. The karma is beginningless, but that doesn't mean he's made with that karma. It's because he takes up the position of karma from the spiritual world. And because it happened in the spiritual world, it's beyond time. Therefore, it's a nadi. Not that it's beginningless from this perspective, because you're dealing with the spiritual world, so you can't apply the two. Can't apply time, material time on spiritual time, and therefore get an answer. Like it's mentioned, they don't need a memory in the spiritual world because everything is present. There is no past, there is no future, it's all present. You don't require a memory. Here, because there's past, you require a memory. So in material time, then you have these things. Not that they're not remembering Krishna, but they're remembering Krishna in the present. Everything's in the present. But here you require a memory because it's in the past. It's not in the present anymore. So if you think about the present, you don't have the past. You have to have the memory. But in the spiritual world, you think about Krishna, he is eternal. So he's always the present. So you can't apply the material logic to the spiritual world. But by the discussions, the material, that means the logical tendency of living in it can be satisfied as long as the interest is bhakti. But if it's not bhakti, it can never be satisfied. If they just simply want it done on the intellectual platform, it can't be done. And they can't tolerate that. They can't tolerate that I'm not intelligent enough to understand everything. So that's the problem. That's the defect. That's the misgiving. It's not a doubt. It's a misgiving. Right? Doubt means is, you know, what's this? Okay, now I understand the word. But you see, we argue over the same words, you know, like that over and over and over for years and years. That's called a misgiving. Doubt means, you know, how did you use the word karma here? Because it's used here in this context, but here it seems to be used differently. That's because we're using it like this, because karma has all these meanings. It's, we're taking the root element of just action. We're not taking the general use of the others. Just like karma is a name of Krishna. But he gives that name to things within the material world to be used, because everything's Krishna, so you have to have names. But then there's different between his, you know, primary names, secondary names, and you know, just general names and all these things. So these general names have been given to the general things here. And so we're attached to this name of Krishna only has a general meaning. When we're trying to point out, no, it also has the transcendental meaning and the metaphysical meaning and the spiritual meaning and all these different things. And so, therefore, we're attached that it can only be used in one way. So when it's used another way, then that brings up a doubt. But when you clear it and it still stays, you've logically cleared it and they've accepted it logically, but it's still there, that means it's a misgiving. Because there's something more. Because we want it to be, no, the action, I want results from my action. Rather than, I want results for Krishna. Because if it's for Krishna, then anything that's being done for Krishna, any activity, that's bhakti. And if it's not being done, no matter what wonderfulness it is not bhakti, it's karma. Right? So that's the whole thing, is that to distinguish between them, then it generally karma is used to mean the material. And then bhakti means the spiritual. But the point is bhakti already includes everything. If you have a reflection, what's reflected is reflecting what's already there. Right? We can see everything in the room. We can see part of it in the mirror. Right? But we're taking it, what the mirror says, that's the total thing. If it's not in the mirror, it's not real. That's the difficulty we come up with. The material intelligence wants to interpret everything through its own self, when its own self is unqualified. So that's the thing. That's why these points are there. All these names belong to Krishna. Then we should give up this point of seeing it only on the ordinary platform. We should be able to also see the word on the ordinary platform as general uses. We should be able to see it on the metaphysical. We should be able to see it on the spiritual, on the transcendental. We should be able to see it on all these levels, however it's used. But we're attached to no, it can only be used in this capacity. That's why the Vedanta Sutra point is made. So we get over that point. He is everything. So therefore, that's established first. Then him being everything, therefore all the names are him. But for general usage, then, because we're dealing for discussing the secondary, then the names apply to the secondary, though in actuality they probably apply to the primary. Because when it's all about devotion to Krishna, and you see then there's a lot of emphasis on the secondary aspect to please Krishna, you get more, that's where the human aspect comes out. That's where all the sweetness comes out. But when you see everything connected to Krishna directly because he is the Lord, then it reduces that sweetness and down to there. But we use the technique to break off our attachment to the material sweetness. You know, money is the honey, right? You know, so we have to give that up to accept that bhakti is the honey. You know, so the intellectual platform is only useful to break our attachment to the material. So the idea is that we have to just switch it. But the words can be used either side because they originate there. They originate there, then they're used here. That we call bhakti. It includes all that. Here, because it's just taking parts, it's not complete. That's why we define it by these names. Bhakti, we don't have to say karma because it already includes body, mind, and words in Krishna's service. But when we're dealing on the material platform, then some, generally speaking, some use the body, some use the mind, some use the words as prominent. So therefore, then we call them jnanis, you know, yogis, karmis, like this. Because they just use that part. But if someone does all of that, then what do you call that? Does that make sense?
So Maharaj, when after finishing to study Vedanta Sutra, we are supposed to be quite clear about primary and secondary.
Yes, that's the idea. But I mean, it'll still go more in the 11th canto. It gets into that very much. You know, that it'll also, you know, it's the third installment in the Gita series. Right? So the Bhagavad Gita is your first, then the Kapila Gita is the second, and then the Uddhava Gita is the third. So same topic. You'll even see same words being used, same points, but it just gets a little bit more subtle and a little bit more broad. Yeah? Yeah. Like the term karma, misra, bhakti. Like that. Or, nishkam karma yoga, sakam karma yoga. Those are used in the 11th canto. But Gita, it's mentioning that, but not using the terms.
Yes.
So that you see the terms are used in the commentaries.
Yes.
But in the Uddhava Gita, then the terms themselves are used in the text.
Okay.
Because you should already know those, and so now you can refer to them. Before, you wouldn't know, so therefore then there is being introduced, so then the commentary is brought out. Okay. So you have the third aspect of the Gita, and then you have the Sandarbhas, and then Chaitanya Charitamrita. So then that same technical points, when we get to Chaitanya Charitamrita, we should be able to discuss them in application of bhakti. So the idea is that by the time we get to Chaitanya Charitamrita, we should, you know, at least be trying to give up our attachment to the intellectual platform. Right? And so then we can discuss intellectually things of practical application and devotional service. But if we're attached to using them intellectually and materially, then we won't be able to appreciate Chaitanya Charitamrita. We'll just be arguing over the same points that we've been arguing since Bhagavad Gita. So the taste of applying them won't be seen. You know, so it's like you say the Gita levels are Sambandha, Bhagavatam is the Abhideya, Chaitanya Charitamrita is the Prayojana. So it's just where the emphasis is. You know. So Gita is that you should take up devotional service, you should know who you are, material nature, Krishna, that what is devotional service, what is the ultimate goal. Bhagavatam is then showing you how to apply all that, Sambandha Gyan. You know, to get that goal of pleasing Krishna. And that unless it's about pleasing Krishna, then the Abhideya won't be perfect because you don't understand the knowledge, you're not applying it properly. It comes Abhideya when it's about Krishna. If it's not about Krishna, it's not Abhideya. Right? So, then, and then Chaitanya Charitamrita, then that is about the Prayojana, how the Lord has come to taste this nectar of prema that the devotees have for him in Vraja. Right? And so then, that's the aspect there. So these other two is there, so then how do these other apply in that context? So, Sambandha Abhideya Prayojana is being discussed in all three levels. But the emphasis, or the view through it, is then through Sambandha, you're seeing Sambandha, Abhideya, and Prayojana. Through Abhideya, you're seeing Sambandha and Prayojana. Through Prayojana, you're seeing Sambandha and Abhideya. So that's the idea, is how we're trying to go through. So it's not that it stays the same. Right? It's the idea is you're going deeper and deeper. Same topic, because the secondary subject matter is the same. The words are the same, the philosophical points are the same, all this, that, but the deeper understanding of that is there. That's why we have to be able to appreciate that further definitions, details of the definitions are given. We don't get stuck that, no, but here it said this. Yeah, it's that and this. That's the importance of being able to see the primary, because when you can see the primary, you can connect so many things to it. Like that. But if we take it that the secondary is the thing, then we can't accept another secondary. That's what happens in your modern religions and philosophy. They can't see that it's all part of one big thing. So how we're practicing religion, this is it, and what you're doing is nonsense. No, they're both part of, if you see the essential point, what they're following. In other words, human life is practiced through or expressed through Varnashram. So that means all people in the human form then use the essence of Varnashram, you know, whatever's important to them in their particular society. But because of the lower consciousness, then it's going to be more distorted, the secondary expression of those main points. You know, it's just like respect. It's there in all cultures. You know, and respecting seniors and respect and like that. But it takes on a different quality. Like, let's say, when Captain Cook and his friends were sailing. And then, at some point, they all disappeared. So then another crew came along to find them. And so then they came to some islands. And then the island people were very happy to see them. And they came out, and then they came with their little boats and all that, and came to the boat, and they brought with them the bones of Captain Cook and his main crew. And they said, you know, what happened? And he said, well, you know, because it was a fight, but they were great warriors. You know, Captain Cook, his men, you know, at least some of them, they were great warriors. And so, but they were defeated by these local tribals. And so because out of respect, then they eat them.
Yes.
You only eat those who you respect. Guy that was a wuss, you don't respect, you don't eat him. You just let the vultures eat him. You know, the dingoes can eat them, you know, stuff like that. So they were coming, being very respectful, said, we ate him because he was such a great warrior. So we brought the bones for you because he's such like that. And so, you know, yeah, it's a gift and like this. And so there, it's respect. You can see that's from the Vedic culture, but you see that the form that they're using for that is a bit distorted from its natural form. And so then it wasn't appreciated by this other group. You know, who could only see the second day. Right? They couldn't appreciate the primary, yes.
The intent.
Sorry?
The intent.
Yeah, the intent. Yeah, yeah. You know, so in other words, you could have made friends with those guys and they would have been allies. Like you see in the Battle of Kurukshetra, you had all these Malecha Yavana tribal groups coming. Even one group, they fought with rocks. Big, they were big monsters, strong people. They fought with rocks. They just picked up big rocks and threw them. And, you know, one rock wipes out 10 guys or something. So then one time, I think it's Satyaki. You know, he's the commander-in-chief of the Dwarka army. And so when he saw, you know, and so you have Astras, you have all these things. He saw guys, these you know, how you say, forest, you know, crazy men, running at him with rocks, yelling and screaming. It's like he's so shocked. It's like, who would do that? I've got Asta. Why would they do that? And so he's just shocked watching them, that someone has to remind him and said, they're getting close. You better do something. You know, otherwise they will hit you with their rock, you know. So then, you know, then he shot his arrows and destroyed them all. But the point is, it's just, there's such a difference. So then you... So that's the thing. As it gets farther away from bhakti, it becomes more distorted. So when you're dealing with manamoy and jnanamoy, then that distortion is, the form of it's basically the same, but the consciousness is distorted. But then when you get down into akarma, then that's where it becomes more distorted, because you're not doing the activity. What you should do, you don't do. And vikarma, you do what you're not supposed to do. Right, so that's the difficulties. The modern is, it's more of a, it means your modern sophisticated society, the pranamoyic aspect, that's akarma. Because, you know, they don't respect authority, you know, everyone's equal, everyone's this, everyone's that. So they have all these platitudes that they present so that you don't follow the tradition. But they give no alternative. That's not what you're supposed to do. You know, it's just like, okay, the guy opens it, like equality, the guy opens the door for the girl. Oh, but then you think you're superior and this and that. Okay, so then it's equal. Then that means he could open the door for her, she could open the door for him. But if he opens the door for her, oh, you think chauvinistic, and no, but it's equal. You can open the door. And if she opens the door, oh, then you're expecting her to serve, now she's your servant. So there is no karma. There's nothing that happens. Nothing goes on. The more you apply it, the more it comes to the point you can't do anything. So that's the whole thing it comes down to, is that it's akarma. That's the prominence. And then vikarma is you just do what you're not supposed to do. So that's why we say the modern prabhu says the passion and ignorance. It's a combination of both. It's akarma and vikarma. Right, but the essential points of what they're trying to base what they're on is based on the Varnashram system. They don't know it, but that's what it's there. You know, it's just like everybody respects an intellectual. Right? You respect an intellectual, you respect someone in power, and you respect someone with money, you expect someone who's famous. Like that. So that's from Varnashram. But they don't know that. But now how it does is that basically it comes down to whoever's got the control more, whether it's through politics or whether it's through money or through knowledge, they're the one that sits on the top. So and you can use anything anywhere. Therefore the businessman controls countries because he supplies the money. But it shouldn't be like that. So we see there's a perversion. Does that make sense? It becomes distorted. So that's the whole thing, is that the elements that are underlying are there. And the natural qualities of the soul are there, but their application becomes distorted. That's why you get this variety. But if you see the essence, what's going on, then you deal with it by that. You know? It's just like, you know, that boy who came to Prabhupada and asked for a dollar for gasoline.
Yes.
You know, and Prabhupada said, why? Because he wanted to kill himself.
Yes.
Like that. And so then he told the devotees he was crazy. And so the devotees think he's crazy because he wanted to kill himself with the gasoline. Yes. Prabhupada said, no, I knew he was crazy because he wanted a dollar when gas was only, I think, 10 cents.
Yes.
You know? Like that. Because the point is he's distressed, and therefore these are just natural things that come up in how the sansharis move. So the point is that because of that he's crazy, therefore that's why you can't get involved. He wants 10 cents, then you know, okay. You know, his brain works, so therefore you can discuss, well, why is that and this and that, and so therefore you discuss through and show that there's no benefit and that's not the way you deal with it. So Prabhupada would stop it there, but then he said, better he goes home. Because he was young, he was very young. So he went to stay with his family and then would visit the temple rather than living at the temple. And so then, does that make sense? So there's a difference in the approach. Because you're seeing from the essence. And so then from there, then you don't have a problem. So that's why then, where you'd have things that seemingly are good, you know, like the nonviolent movement, you know, the anti-war, anti-Vietnam sentiment, Prabhupada wasn't very supportive of it because it wasn't in line with the principle of authority. And so that you want to be peaceful and all that, but you become peaceful by spiritual life, not by not fighting. Right? Just because you don't fight doesn't mean you're peaceful, because hippies don't fight, but all they do is, you know, smoke dope and have sex. Like that. So then how is that going to make you peaceful? So therefore, in principle, that part's wrong. But the same part, then in the same principle, is that they're used taking up an alternative lifestyle looking for something spiritual. And therefore, in that lifestyle, they're quite renounced. They use old clothes, they don't have many clothes, they always use the same clothes, they can go anywhere, sleep anywhere. Somebody's got a bus and say, hey, we're going here to this program, you want to come? And yeah, you just get on with them, you don't have any. So they're very renounced. And they're renounced in some way, you know, intent for spiritual, that's very good. Well then, let's say the mainstream culture, then they're saying these guys are useless and are wastrels and all that, and dirty and this and that. They're, you know, there's a term, the dirty hippies. In fact, the West Coast hippies, that's what they call themselves, the dirty hippies. You know, you say, well, why would they use that? That's the way it works. So from that, then he was supporting, no, they're interested in that. While the mainstream, they're just interested in their eating, sleeping, mating, defending, and satisfied with. So they're wrong. But that the others, they accept, you know, the standards and culture and tradition. They're right there. So in other words, the place where it's supportive of the Vedic conclusion, that is supported. And what's not, that's what's spoken against. That's why it's so hard to understand the position of devotees. And we want to make it very clear to people, no, we're on your side, we're the same, but we're not. We're supportive of what's proper, we support. What's not proper, we don't. It's that simple. And it's not sentiment. It's defined by the Shastras, by the Acharyas. Right? So that's then how it's done. So then we're able to approach everything very nicely. So that's why seeing that and then applying the essence to the secondary, what's there, you use the secondary, but for expressing the primary. Right? Does that make sense? So let's say fear, that's one of the reasons to surrender to God. Right? Because of fear. And so therefore then when Prabhupada was talking with that formerly one race car driver, then they discussed cars, because the medium is cars. But he brought it to the point of surrender. Where do you that? He needs a new car? No, he's being financed, so he's not has a problem there. So what's going to end? He's not so much wanting to know about God. It's not gratefulness. So therefore, what's left? Fear. So therefore, then when racing, it's dangerous. Right? And then, you know, when you're especially in the corners, right? Generally, crashes happen in corners, not on the straight. And so therefore the corner is, do you find you're fearful? When you're fearful, what do you do? So then Prabhupada brought in surrendering to God. Right? So that's the point. Is the secondary is exactly where we're going to discuss. But then trying to reverse it and say the secondary is the main thing, and it's all about the secondary, that means we're completely missing the point of the philosophy. It's about the primary. Yes, you're using it right now. Right now they're in that position. And then as they mature, as they get purified, as they advance, then the position may change. What aspects change, you let them naturally change. And the parts that don't change, those are defined by Shastra. A Brahmin will remain a Brahmin in his activities, in his situation like that. But he takes up the devotional position. So even though he's maybe very intellectual, he has the humility that any other Vaishnava would have. Right? Somebody says, but in the beginning, they may take that scholarly identity and all that. You engage that in Krishna's service. But you're trying to bring it to the other, not that, oh no, this is better and superior. So that's why these modern takes on Krishna consciousness, where through, you know, the need for soft preaching, we simply deal with the secondary and leave it as it is, and in fact it's better left as it is, and in fact, you know, that's even better, because it's not about you know, these Vedic secondary, you know, it's about the Western secondary, because Western secondary, of course, is better than anything that the heathens and savages from the East can come up with, right? You know, like that. So, like that. This struck me on this, that the French were actually better at accommodating the Eastern elements of lifestyle than the British, because they're actually farther east. So they're less degraded. Yeah. By the Vedic version. Yeah.
So Maharaj, if we don't understand this difference between primary and secondary, our movement can be destroyed.
Movement can never be destroyed. We may not be able to take part in it, but the movement is Lord Chaitanya's movement. So since it's here and started up and things are going so nicely, why distract it? You know, go with the actual devotional flow rather than distract it by our own attachments. But even this point when Prabhupada says it can only be destroyed from the inside means what secondary forms are there and what advantages, tools are there, that can be destroyed. But the principle of the movement, and that the movement will succeed, that will go on. It's just whether we take part or not. That's the point. The mission will be successful. It's who gets the credit. That's all. Who takes part. That's the whole thing. So it's already, there's an advantage to take. There's a momentum. We should take advantage of that. Otherwise, you have to start all over again. But it will be successful. Because it's 10,000 years. So it's you know, takes a few hundred years. I think Krishna took 300-400 years to get really established.
Yes.
You know, so it's not a big deal. Krishna just does everything quicker, so it won't take that long. So the point is it's not a problem of time, a matter of time.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Jai Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki, Jai Nitai Gaura Premana ki.
Hare Krishna, can I have your attention? There will be no classes next week. And we resume on the 19th, Monday, week after, both morning and afternoon classes.
Afternoon means 4.
4 to 5:30.
Yes.